You know, I should have looked up because I only know Harrison Ford. Aliens? I don't know the other stars of the movie.
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig and Kate.
Daniel Craig is the main.
Who's the girl?
I could not tell you.
Hottie. Mick Hoddington. I don't know.
That's off a movie.
Probably. We could just refer to her as boobs.
Why am I? Okay. If you guys can't hear me, that's just tough.
We can hear you. It's terrible.
Okay, good. No, that's fine.
Okay, let's go.
Yes, sir.
I could see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's only the moment that I don't wanna miss. And what I'm trying to say, well, I don't know, but I thought it was important just a minute ago. What I'm dying to say can't even be bought, cause I lost my ticket on the train of thought.
Hello all, and welcome to Comic Pop Library, episode 12. This week we're going to have Johnny giving us a review of Wonderful Wizard of Oz, and Mr. Matt is going to give us a review of Cowboys and Aliens. And we'll have Johnny go first, so take it away, sir.
All right, so if you're from Kansas, you know the story of the Wizard of Oz. It's kind of, you're, I'm sure, required by something in the Kansas
Constitution.
I'm from
Kansas, I don't know it.
Well, you are a waste of space. And and that's saying a lot. We're in Kansas. We got nothing but space. If you're from Kansas, you are at least vaguely familiar with the concept of the Wizard of Oz, with Dorothy and Toto and the Lion and et cetera.
Who?
And so, you know, when I saw that Marvel had done the Wonderful
Wasn't
Wizard
of
Oz.
Was that a song, Toto? No, a group.
Africa.
Probably.
It's by Africa, Toto.
I'm sorry, Johnny. We just got to give you grief, too.
Well, it's okay. I have broad shoulders. There's space there.
We're never going to get done. Anyway.
When I saw that Marvel did The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, I was intrigued.
Because, oh, Marvel did that?
Yeah, it's Marvel.
Okay. Something new. All right.
Yeah. It's amazing. Anyway, the writer is Eric Schanauer, and the artist is Scotty Young. And what they did was they took a lot of the original text from the L. Frank Baum book, and they fleshed out the story a little bit in a comic book, which is a little intriguing. If you've only ever seen the movie, there are aspects to the characters that you wouldn't know, like the story of how the Tin Man became a Tin Man. Like, was he always a Tin Man or whatever?
Who was his maker?
Yeah, those sorts of things. They give background stories for each character that you don't get in the film. So, sorry, I paused because you inhaled and then said nothing.
Well, brief mention, I forgot to mention who I was here. We do have a guest in the audience today. Her name is Charity, along with the four of us. So I apologize, Charity.
It's okay.
I'm sorry, Johnny. We're forgetting everything today.
I know.
New year, not starting off.
Cut, start over.
The artwork doesn't follow the film. They kind of, I mean, it's going to be similar because it's a Tin Man and a Scarecrow. There's not.
And a Cowardly Lion.
And a Cowardly Lion.
There's, and mice.
Yeah. There's not going to be a whole lot of difference. But they.
I flipped through it. And just by looking at the artwork, I wanted to read it.
Oh, yeah. It's highly stylized. And and the dialogue on it is slightly elevated, like it is in the book. Because the book was written, 100 years ago or something? And so they.
Give me the lion. Wikipedia time, Chris.
All right. So the speech patterns are a little elevated, and one thing that I thought was interesting in this one, as opposed to the other one that we did last month, last podcast, what was it called?
Hatter M.
Yes, thank you. I'm like Alice in Wonderland. No, it's not it. Hatter M. When you had an action sequence, it would eschew dialogue. It wouldn't use dialogue, and it would try to show you in the panels. And I thought that felt rather disjointed because you would see the end result of an action. You know, like you only know he's flying through the window because there's broken glass and he's now falling. He was previously in the center of the room. Now there's broken glass, he's falling. So you can put two and two together, but there was nothing in the middle and no explanation. And that felt a little disjointed. In this, they extrapolate a lot. They tell you what happens. And sometimes they'll show an image of, like, just the character. You know, the drawing is just of the character, and it says the character did this, and he was very happy or whatever. But it doesn't actually show you everything.
So they're going back to the style of using the descriptive boxes, which is kind of fallen away in comics in today's age.
Right.
Where it's just the person's individual speaking.
Right.
So they're going back to an old school type of style.
But there's one person speaking per pane?
No, either had a thought box or a descriptive box, and it was literally a box or a rectangle. And if an individual is talking, it would be in a word bubble or a thought balloon.
Okay.
So it tried to be distinct from, so you could tell who's doing what, if it's narrative or if it's first person.
Right. And some of these boxes, and that's exactly how they do it in this one, and some of the boxes will give you insight as to what they're thinking. Like this one says, what worried her most was that the bread was nearly gone, which you couldn't get that from the image that it shows. The image is just her digging in her basket that she carries with her. So there's no other way for them to convey that she was worried about how much bread they had, unless they did like several panes of showing her face and then how little bread they had, you know.
Right.
So it does a lot of telling you what they're thinking or how they're feeling.
Okay. Wikipedia time. Children's novel written by Frank Baum, illustrated by W.W. Denslow, originally published by the George M. Hill Company in Chicago, May 17th, 1900. Sorry.
Oh, okay. So
it's over. Yeah, over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Good job,
Johnny. I couldn't remember exactly when it was published, but it was about 100 years ago. Yeah, it's 112 years ago. Yeah. So it's actually quite good. And then another cool aspect of it, since it follows the book, the story continues past where the movie ended. The movie ends with Dorothy, the wizard flies away in the balloon, and then she clicks her heels and she goes home and she wakes up at home. Well, in the book, they actually go on more adventures. They have to travel to the south. They have to travel to see the Good Witch, and they encounter an entire country of porcelain people and all sorts of cool stuff that I never knew existed because I'd only ever watched the movie.
And that was what happened to me as well.
Was that
I've
in the
only
book too?
Seen.
Yeah. Excuse it's me. In here.
Was that in the original?
Yeah.
Book where they
yes,
went on.
This is a true adaptation of the book.
Yeah.
Where I was like, Johnny, I've always been brought up on the movie Wizard of Oz with, was it Dorothy? Who was the, played Dorothy? Judy Garland.
Yeah, Judy Garland.
You know, so that's who I saw as Dorothy. And have you watched Charity?
Yes.
Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Have you looked at this at all?
I've seen it in the library, but I've never actually looked at the book.
Oh, that's
cool.
You should check it out.
It is pretty cool. I enjoyed it.
Where the movie took it to an all-ages level, the book is more written to a higher audience almost than a children's story.
Older. I don't know how high they are.
Yeah, true. Okay, Johnny.
Wow.
But the graphic novel kind of took that same...
Oh, yeah. The
tone,
Tin Man, like, kills people.
It didn't lighten it up at all. It was a more mature tone.
It was good. I enjoyed the artwork, too. One of the things was the Emerald City is actually Emerald. It's not just the name of the city.
Right.
I went, okay. I did not know that. And I don't know if that's in the children's book or not.
No. In this, the city is not Emerald. The outside wall is. The rest of it's just normal. But the wizard told them to, here, put on these goggles, otherwise you'll be blinded. So they all put it on, believing him. If they ever took the goggles off, everything would just be normal colors. Mm. But the goggles are shaded green, so they think everything is emerald, even though only part of it is.
The trickery.
It's kind of interesting.
Interesting book. They call him a humbug. And, you know, I'm almost ashamed to admit this. I have a degree in English, but I never really heard the word used outside of Bah Humbug for, you know, the Christmas Christmas Carol. And the word humbug is something false or a hoax. So when they discover that the wizard is not really a wizard, he's just a dude using props and things and deceiving everyone, they're like, you're a humbug. I'm like...
What?
That's the word you chose. I would have.
Well, it was in 1900s. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I was talking about. The what we would consider elevated speech pattern. It was really more of the way they wrote around that time. And it was really neat. I think they really preserved that feel and extrapolated the cool parts of the story. They kept the, if you've seen the film, you know, this will be very familiar. It's not like they took anything away. They just added stuff.
Probably one of the more jarring images besides the main characters, because they do not look anything like the movie at all. They just kind of disregard the movie ever happened. They just do a straight adaptation from the book. But you can't help comparing them.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, it was the flying monkeys. You know, how fake those looked and everything.
Come on, these flying monkeys
and here, they look pretty scary. I mean, one of those where it's like, oh, man, maybe this shouldn't go into the kids area. This needs to maybe go to the teen area because it's more mature in theme. And like you said, you know, the Tin Man. Like some people,
he takes his axe and like chops everything. If it's a problem, oh, use my axe. Poof, off goes their head. It's like a graphic version of Alice in Wonderland. Off with their heads. Only you see him literally chop their head off.
Take them down.
The other thing about it that I you know, again, it goes back to, I haven't read the book. I've only ever seen the movie. You know, like the relationship of the flying monkeys to the witch in the movie. I always just thought that she was the evil witch and she controlled the monkeys, and that's just how it was. In the book, she can only summon them in only a certain number of times, which I never knew. I never knew that was even any bit of it. So
I thought they were always just her slaves.
Right. Like she kept pet flying monkeys around.
Good monkey.
You know, awesome, honestly. I wouldn't blame her. I'd keep
go,
pet
my
flying
monkey.
Monkeys.
Hey, what, you got my flying monkey?
Yeah. So, and
talking about the book, Chris, don't give me that look.
You know, they utilize the characters in cool ways too. The scarecrow, because he's made of straw, is indestructible. So they dropped him off of buildings and like jumped onto him from the top of walls. And
well, yeah, he even says that in the book that there's only one thing I'm scared of. I'm basically indestructible. I'm only scared of fire. And he actually says a lit match in the book is what he's scared of, and that's the only thing that really scares him.
Well, and then one of the nights they camp out he says, I'm gonna go collect firewood. They're like, you don't have to go collect firewood, you know, you could just hang out here. He's like, you know, actually I don't have to sleep, and going to get the firewood keeps me away from the fire. So he was okay with gathering firewood all night long.
Like, go ahead and light my fire.
I don't know. I thought it was really, really well done. And if you don't have it in your library, you really should get it. It's an excellent addition to any collection. So.
And when it first came out, it was actually in a miniseries format in individual issues. And from the reports at that time, they flew off the shelf. And I'll let you mention this as well. But there's been subsequent stories as well.
The first one, of course, is The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. But L. Frank Baum wrote 13 more books, and then there were, I don't know, 13 or 14 more beyond that that other people wrote. So I don't know how far this comic book series is going to go, but they've done three of them so far. The second one is The Marvelous Land of Oz, and the other one is Ozma of Oz,
I believe.
Something
really?
Like that. So
see,
there's two more currently.
Day. Did not know that.
Did not know what?
That there were more books.
Oh, yeah. You go upstairs or to the children's department, we got most of them, if not all of them.
Matt's in the basement and stays in the basement.
In his cage where he belongs.
Yes. That's what I said. I learned something new every day. I did not know there were more than that.
Oh, yeah. He wrote when this became popular, he only lived 19 more years, L. Frank Baum, and then he... But in that 19 years, he wrote 13 sequels to it.
Holy cow.
So he just
wonder he died after 19 more years.
Well, it was hugely successful. Anybody. So you know, but that was later in life. He was 50 something, I think, when it first hit.
He died in 1919.
Right. Yeah.
And who was the author again?
I
can't remember.
Of course, it's based on L. Frank Baum, but the writer...
Adapter, rather.
Yeah, The writer, adapter, whatever you want to call it, they listed his writer in here is Eric Schanauer, and the artist is Scotty Young. And it's wonderful art, wonderful storytelling.
And I'm wanting to say, in the introduction to the graphic novel, I think he actually writes a piece in it where I read it in an article. This was one of his favorite books as a child, and he continued loving it as an adult, and that's why I wanted to put it in comic form, so his kids would be able to enjoy it in a comic form. And Marvel was rolled the dice. They didn't know if it would go over or not, and it blew up. I mean, it's big. It was sellouts, and that's why he's been able to do the next two, and I think he's currently working on the next one right now. I'm not sure what the title is, though.
Right.
But as long as there's money coming in for Marvel, I'm sure they're more than happy to oblige him. But
yeah,
it started out as a something that he wanted to do,
yeah,
not Marvel seeking to do it. It was the adapter. A little bit of interesting background.
They pulled it off really, really well.
Wikipedia says there are 13... Did you say that? There were 13 sequels to The Wizard,
yes,
of Oz?
He did.
Right, 13 by L. Frank Baum.
Right.
And then there were about 13 more, so I think there were 26 or 29 total, but the other
author.
Yeah, the rest of them are by other author, at least one other author, if not other authors, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Where would you place it at in your library?
Well, I would put it in the teen department.
You think teen as well?
Yeah, because, I mean, I wouldn't put it in the adult. It's not that graphic. But littler kids might find some of it intense. The Wicked Witch of the West looks like a wicked witch.
She is ugly.
Yeah, she's not a lady with a long nose painted green. She looks like she might eat small children. and she only has one eye in the book. And she is pretty, you know, hideous. And there's some parts that are meant to be genuinely scary. And, you know, I think they pulled it off.
The way she does.
I mean, I wasn't quaking
in
my boots, but an 8-year-old would probably be.
You think? What age do you think? Probably
teens, 12 to 18.
12, you think?
Yeah.
Because I know he said he wrote it for his kids to experience the actual story instead of the movie version.
Well, it's the other thing. The other thing about it, though, is 110 years ago,
put it this
children's
way,
stories were
a little bit
scarier.
More, yeah, because yeah, where we have the books, we have this in the graphic novels in the teen area as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the books are actually in our 5th and 6th grade level area, which is still over in the top end of the children's section.
Oh, yeah, we don't differentiate that much. Okay. We have JUV, juveniles,
all
together. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, but no, the books are there. But, you know, the thing is, there was one particular spot where the Tin Man was like, you know what, this isn't right. And he just picks up his axe and kills something. Like, and that struck me that in a modern children's book, that would be the worst thing to ever happen in children's literature since, you know, the nuclear bomb or something. I mean, things feel more marshmallow today than they would have been 100 years ago.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Well, it was a harder time back then, too.
Yeah.
So
people weren't as into, I don't know, pampering. Maybe that's the right word.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I think you might have grown up a little bit earlier when you were in the 1900s.
Yeah.
You were probably married by 16.
Yeah.
Or
had
younger.
A kid,
yeah.
You know, had children while you were 16. You know,
and you were dying at 26.
Yeah, exactly.
So
that's why they got married at 14.
But I think that if I were to try to put that in the children's department, I would catch flack for it.
I think you would, too. Definitely
an adult
youth book.
Yeah.
Any other comments before we head out?
Head out. We still got one more to do.
Yep.
Head into the next one.
Into the next segment.
Transition.
Well, before we go into the next segment, yes, let's do a segue into a commercial. We like to thank MusicAlley.com for providing the intro for us and our outro. They've been nice enough to let podcasts use their product at no charge. If individuals are interested in music and like the small indie songs, go to their website, MusicAlley.com. They have individual songs you can look up by author, if you happen to know some of the independent young, well, not young, but independent,
musicians,
smaller artists that don't have a label or they have it by genre, click into that. And it's pretty much like anything else. It's 99 cents a song. Not too bad. So check them out. And at this time, we'll roll into Matt's review.
Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah.
Is that a book? Is there a book on Cowboys and Aliens?
There was a graphic novel first.
Okay.
We've got it upstairs.
Really? Yeah. Going to have to check that out, see what it does. See what it's like with a movie. This movie, Cowboys and Aliens, hence the name, involves cowboys and aliens. It stars Harrison Ford. Allison?
Allison.
I don't know where that came from.
Allison's his lesser-known cousin.
Harrison Ford. Daniel Craig. I think that's how you say that.
Yeah, Daniel Craig. He's the new
and
Bond.
Bond. Yeah, that's right. He is. Yeah. And Olivia Wilde is the
girl
you're
thinking
of. Oh, yeah,
that's her name.
The movie itself was good. The storyline, I know Richard watched it, Johnny's watched it, Chris hasn't. I wasn't the greatest on the storyline as to what happened. I thought it was kind of predictable, things of that stuff. But it was cool in the aspect of, Have you ever seen a movie with cowboys and aliens? I haven't.
That's blending of genres.
And it was really cool because it brought these two really cool genres together in the 1870-something is when the movie was supposed to happen.
Bonanza 2012.
Not quite. The movie starts out, Daniel's character is Jack, I think is what his name was, something like that. He basically wakes up in the desert with... out his boots, and he's Jake. Got this weird metal bracelet on his wrist, and he can remember nothing. And as the movie portrays, he starts to remember what happened to him, and basically you find out that aliens are in the wild, wild west mining gold.
Stealing our gold.
Is basically what the movie is, and these cowboys go after to rescue all the people they have taken that they are basically experimenting on. That's more or less the gist of the movie. That's why I said the storyline to me seemed to kind of lack a little bit.
And I haven't read the graphic novel to know
if
there's
either.
More to it.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
You know, when you adapt a graphic novel book to a movie, you lose some of that most of the time.
Well, graphic novels translate better than books.
I can understand that. I don't know. I haven't seen the book. I haven't seen the graphic novel, so I haven't either,
to be honest.
You know, what was all in it. You know, some of it, special effects really good, mm-hmm. the acting really good. I know we have it at our library, and I've seen it checked out and on hold a couple of times already. So I think a lot of people are looking at it, and definitely one you should probably add for that. Mm-hmm. Was it the greatest movie? No.
One of those they call popcorn movies.
Yeah.
Just go to watch and don't think about anything.
Yeah, yeah. That's the end of it. That's what I said.
Well, I think that I was a little bit more let down by it than some, maybe. I don't know. John Favreau, who directed Iron Man and Iron Man 2, and he's directed and been in several other things that I really like, directed this film. And so when I was like, wow, it's a Cowboys and Aliens. We're going to blend Cowboys and Aliens, and John Favreau's directing it. That's going to be awesome. Oh, sweet, and it's got Harrison Ford. How perfect is that? You know, I was all excited about it.
Yeah, Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
Indiana Jones or Han Solo.
Yeah.
And James Bond.
That really hot chick. Right. What's her name? Oh, Olivia Wilde. You know, I was excited about the whole thing. And to be fair, some of it was very good. Harrison Ford's performance was outstanding. I mean, this isn't just fanboy talking. He really portrayed a hard-ass businessman who...
Ex-military.
Yeah, ex-military, right. who has to do that, who is a tyrant and a tycoon, but is also a human being and loves his son. And, you know, so it was a nuanced performance. I really thought it was great. But
it was one of those where it's the circle and the square problem.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds so cool, but when you get there, it's like it doesn't quite fit right, and you got to jam it in there to make it be a little cohesive. Because to me, the first part, the Western, if it would have been a straight Western with those characters.
Oh, it'd been epic.
Oh, cool.
It was
great.
The story leading up to, you know, I guess the character building, if you want to say it, the kind of the beginning, mm-hmm. was really actually pretty good. You know, mm-hmm. you learn about Harrison Ford character. The only one who's really a mystery is Jake as to what happened to him.
Yeah, amnesia does that.
That's what it is. But and you find out why.
Right.
And kind of, you know, they threw, and I'm not even sure what Olivia Wilde's character actually was in the movie, other than another alien.
Another alien species come to
help
us, in quotation marks. It's like, you didn't do nothing, hardly. No, you didn't warn us. You didn't
And it's like, okay. That's why I said, I don't know. I thought it was going to be more epic than what it was. Yeah, I agree. The popcorn thing. Sit down, grab a bag of popcorn, watch the movie, go, hey, that was cool. It's cowboys and aliens together. Okay. And go on with your life.
Just have a fun ride, basically. The alien design I appreciated because
mm-hmm.
when my family, when we watched it over the holidays, we rented it, and first thing we thought of, or my wife and I anyway, was locusts.
Mm.
And what was one of the problems back then, but locusts eating crops and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you kind of saw that blending, and I don't know if that's a reflection of the graphic novel or that's a tweak that the director did. Who knows? And to me, it could have been, I hope it's one and done.
No.
They want to, I guess they could extend it, but they really don't have anything to extend it on, really.
No, I think pretty much where the movie ended, it ended.
Yeah, right. And I don't think that commercially it did as well as they hoped it would, so it probably won't have a sequel, even if there was like material for it. I don't think they would.
Well, I think it was a storyline that kind of, you know.
Right, and I think instead of being gold that they were after, it would have meant more to the community to me if it was water they were after.
Or unobtainium.
Well, he's only throwing that in for Avatar because that was the stupidest thing in that movie.
Okay, the thing about to play devil's advocate to counterpoint that, if these aliens from outer space, the Earth looks like a giant bluish ball because it's got lots and lots of water. So why would they go to the desert for the water?
True.
So I mean,
suck it up into their hoses.
Yeah, they just go like, you know, if they need fresh water, they'll just go over to the Great Lakes and drink those
dry
bad boys. But
or at least make it, instead of just gold, make it all raw materials. You know, specifically with gold, he felt like they were trying too hard to make it a Western concept.
Yeah, the gold rush of those days.
You know, if gold was part of it, you know, because when she explained it, the alien, Lady Olivia.
Yeah, it's Olivia Wilde is who the character is.
Exactly.
Ellis Swanson.
Ellis
Swanson, I don't know what her name is. Okay.
She basically laid out it was just the gold they were after because it was as precious to them as it was to us. If she would even elaborate and said, you know, they want all of your natural resources, this group is just concentrating on the gold.
Yeah, it would have made a little more.
Right.
Well, and it also would have opened up a possibility for sequels.
Right. You could go over here and they're getting silver. Over here, they're getting iron, whatever. So
all the wool in the world.
There's one scene in the movie that...
They come from a cold planet.
No, that wasn't wool. It was the scene where they took the cows, where the guy says he's going to go to the bathroom and he's sitting by the river.
Yes.
They basically come in and take all the cows and the guy gets knocked into the water and stands up and all the cows and the place is blown up. And he went, what do you think of when you think of alien movies from, you know, the cowboy era or whatever? What'd they come for? Cows. Why are they taking cows? I don't know.
And which reminds me, Harrison Ford was a mean SOB in this one.
Oh, yeah. He was.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's what I said. He's a tyrant.
Really?
I mean,
how is he on the John Wayne scale?
Oh, he was.
He's pretty up there.
If this was a pure
Western, Harrison Ford would be the villain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He
kind of was a villain. And the only reason I really think he went with them is because his son was taken.
Right.
And it was the love for his son that kind of made him human. Cha-ching.
Well,
because he owned the bank too?
Part of the story, though, I think.
He owned everything in the town, pretty much.
I think part of the story, though, was a bit of a redemption story for him. Because he'd been such a mean SOB to everyone for so long. And everybody thought he was just a devil. And then you see that there is more to this man. And by the end, he does the right thing. I mean, yeah, his son's there, but he still did the right thing in the end, for the right reasons even. So I think that part of it was a redemption. He was almost an anti-hero by the end, you know. That he was. Did that hurt? Are you okay?
Oh, God.
Yeah, pizza I ate for dinner is coming back to haunt me. I'm sorry.
Did it taste better the second time?
Not really.
But to show you how bad I am in my scope of stuff, and my geekdom, I guess, if you want to call it that, I was looking at ways they could have tweaked this to make it into a larger story. Have her survive, the alien gal survive, and somehow her and Daniel Craig were able to interbreed, and you start getting...
Wow!
You start getting this mix of human and alien hybrids, then you could skip forward to Roswell.
Oh, okay.
Here comes this other alien race. They're escaping their own world as well, and you have a scout ship following them or chasing them to Earth. You have another whole deal there. The government's covered it up. And then you can jump another couple of decades later and have this battle royale, like SG-1 type stuff, where because of all this hidden technology that's been being developed with these two different alien cultures, you could have a big battle royale.
You could have probably, I don't know where the graphic novel leads, if it was a one-time thing, but there's so much more that could have been done. I think the biggest thing was that it was two genres that have never been put together, thrown into a movie.
Might never be put together again.
Well, may not.
You know, here's the thing, though. The other thing that excited me about it was that the space and cowboys thing has been done successfully with Firefly and Serenity.
Yeah, right.
Those are the greatest stuff I've ever watched.
Exactly.
And so when I saw Cowboys and Aliens, I was like, oh, that could be cool. And
it's such a letdown, isn't it?
I know. I was so stoked. I was like a little kid about it, you know?
Well, you're comparing it to Serenity and Firefly.
True.
Well,
which is in itself a futuristic story, though. It's just,
well, yeah,
it's been blasted back, and the colonies are like the old Western days.
Right.
So, did they even have an alien species per se?
No, no, it was all human.
It was all human.
Okay,
it was all human.
Alien worlds, but they...
But, yeah, it's... You know, it's one of those. It was a popular movie, I guess. I don't know if it did as good in the box office as they hoped. I don't think it did horrible.
Well, the two big stars. That was the big draw.
Though it was the big draw. You're right. It's one of those. When did it come out? It came out a couple weeks ago.
A couple weeks ago.
Sorry.
2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I don't know exactly, Chris.
The IT guy is letting you down.
You're talking about the...
So that's 2011.
DVD?
July 29th.
Yeah, July... No.
Oh, well, that's when the movie came out.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow, no. either it's out, you know, on DVD.
Right.
I don't know if it came out at the end of December, beginning of January. It's probably one of those. It was popular. It's going to be in a list, auto list, whatever, probably thrown in there because it was popular because of the stars. Yeah, get it. People are going to rent it for a while, but I don't think you're going to have anybody beating down your door that you have to have 10 copies of this or something.
I don't think so.
You know, one, if you buy multiple copies of more popular stuff, this is probably one to get one copy of.
No more than
came out
two,
December 6th maybe. On December DVD 6th. And okay. Blu-ray.
So about a month ago. It'd be one of those, you know, maybe one copy if you're a really, really big library that you have a lot. Maybe grab two copies, but probably not more than that.
There's a copyright infringement lawsuit going on this movie right now.
Oh, really?
Really?
According to Wikipedia.
What?
Copyright
infringement lawsuit.
Yep.
Nice.
He wrote a story back in 94 saying that, I don't know, it's kind of weird. If you want to know information, go to Wikipedia and look up Cowboys and Aliens.
You're going to have to look it up and just figure out what it
Chris
is.
Chris isn't a speed reader.
No.
They're not highlighted in there either.
But other than that, you know, it's got good acting. It's not a bad movie to watch. It's just not... I can't think of any epic movies as of lately that are just unbelievably epic. Iron Man, you know.
Oh, it's the people who did the graphic novel.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Really?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
How are they suing them when they gave them the rights?
All right. See, this is the last line. The guys of the graphic novel allege that in 1977, Romsberg and Platinum produced a one-sheet depicting a cowboy being chased by an alien, which eventually led to Universal and DreamWorks buying film rights and Platinum producing a graphic novel series in 2006 that resembled his works. So,
interesting.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm not sure about that. That's a head-scratcher.
Yeah, that's one of those political things, maybe.
Well, sometimes artists get...
Just on a sheet?
Well...
I can see if you were...
In The Hangover 2, okay, you're familiar with the film.
Yeah.
The dude...
I'm trying to figure out...
He got Mike... This ties, let me get there.
Okay.
The dude got Mike Tyson's tattoo on his face. You know, Mike Tyson has a tattoo on his face. He got one like it in the, you know, his character did in the movie. And the original tattoo artist who tattooed Mike Tyson sued for copyright infringement. Even though his artwork was purchased by Mike Tyson, is on Mike Tyson's face, the artist still said that it's stealing his intellectual property. I don't know what ever came of it, but, you know, so sometimes they get kind of up in
artists
arms about
a little
it.
Weird. So.
Reading a little bit more, I guess his name is Busty, B-U-S-T-I.
God.
That's okay. His full name
Charity
is Stephen.
Charity even laughed at that
Stephen
one.
John Busty.
Wow.
Okay. So anyway, Busty claimed copyright infringement, stating that he wrote a preview to this story, Cowboys and Aliens, in 1994, and that it was published in a January 1995 issue of Bizarre Fantasy Number 1.
Maybe. I don't know.
He's suing, saying they stole his idea.
Right.
From the book or from the magazine, whatever.
Sometimes they win, sometimes they don't.
I don't know, but there's my idea on the movie. I don't know what, Johnny, did you really say, well, besides you were big letdown?
Well, okay, yeah, let me qualify that. It was a letdown, but that's only because I had such high expectations and huge expectations. So in the sense that it was a letdown, that's it was, but I enjoyed it. You know, I think it's an enjoyable film. It's a popcorn film. Don't expect a whole lot out of it. Just watch it.
Enjoy it for what it is.
You need to trademark that phrase. Popcorn film.
It's a popcorn. You've never heard that before?
I haven't.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. Sit down, have a bag of popcorn, eat your popcorn, and watch the movie.
It would be considered a beer film, because I want to watch those.
Beer Fest.
Beer Fest, yes. Yeah.
He knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, or Strange Brew.
You have to twist it just right at the end.
We're not. Exactly.
I don't plan on
one.
Drinking out of boots.
Why?
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we've all seen it. Okay.
But I want to go for a swim in beer.
He drowned.
He might drown. Dry up.
We're not putting the plug in for the movie, but if you have never watched Comedy Central's Beer Fest,
I've actually seen that.
Just watch it sometime, because it's just one of those stupid funny movies. It's great. But
you will lose brain cells.
Yes, you will.
Whether you are drinking or not.
But it was so worth it. Okay, we should stay on task.
Task.
I think with that, we're pretty much done here. We're toast. We might be a little burnt even. So
toasted.
So everybody out there, hope you're having fun, because we are. We'll catch you all later.
I can see it all so clear.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.